Goswami is the brother of Srila Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami and Srila Rupa Goswami were Dabir Kas and Shakar Malik, respectively. And they were chief financial officer and chief minister of Bengal under the Nawab, the emperor, who entrusted the management to these most expert of devotees, although they were not devotees per se at that time. They were from a culture, a Brahminical culture, that had been overcome temporarily by Muslim invaders who became rulers and who hired many of the Brahmanas because they were the most intelligent to manage things. Dabir Kas Shakar Malik came from Saraswat Brahmin community, very high class. And then they took to this management and associated with the culture of the time, and they kept the external trappings of a Muslim, of Muslims, and they had then heard about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was nearby doing chanting, giving darshan to what became tens of thousands of people, a festival-like atmosphere. In fact, the emperor had taken notice, commented that this person must be divine because he said, I have thousands of followers, but I have to pay them, otherwise they'll mutiny. And he doesn't pay any of them, and they follow him wherever he goes. Dabir Kas Shakar Malik had written a letter to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they hadn't received a response in several days, and not knowing how long he would be in the area, they clandestinely went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when they met him, Mahaprabhu recognized them, honored them as old friends immediately. Of course, Srila Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami are part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eternal Leela, and also in Krishna Leela, as the Gauravana Desha Deepika tells us. There are the Sakis who assist Srimati Radharani. And in the worldly manifestation during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, they start off in this undercover way, and then gradually, as many acharyas, they come out into the to their true glory. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had embraced them at that first meeting and initiated them on the spot as Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. When Sanatan and Rupa went back to their day jobs, they were reluctant to continue working. And they began making arrangements to leave their employ and to join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami was successful after some time, although it took about a year for him to wind up his employment responsibilities and leave. Sanatan Goswami had called in sick. He's the one who started that phenomenon, calling in sick. And after 10 days of being on sick leave, his employer, the Nawab, or the emperor, had missed him greatly because he was dependent on him and Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami had already decamped, and now, fearing Sanatan Goswami's becoming more distant, the Nawab sent a doctor to his house to see what kind of ailment he might have. And the doctor, upon entering the home of Sanatan Goswami, found the Sanatan head, employed about 20 brahmanas to study the Srimad Bhagavatam. That was the then method of using a Veda base. If you wanted to look something up, it wasn't so easy. Everything was on palm leaves, or the brahmanas had to have memorized certain passages. So as Rupa Goswami was, as Sanatan Radha was going through the Shastra, he would ask these brahmanas to look up certain passages and so forth. In this way, he was spending his full time, not sick, but sick of being employed with the Nawab. Nawab then came himself and told Sanatan, enough of this. We already lost your brother and I can't do without you. I need you to run the government because I have some wars to fight. So I need you to come back. Sanatan said, I'm not coming back. And in fact, I wouldn't help you anyway because you're going there to Jagannath Puri to give pain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Nawab wanted to go and conquer the parts of Orissa that he had not yet conquered. And then the Nawab gave him an ultimatum, which is that you either work or you go to jail. Now, Rupa Goswami had foreseen this possibility that his elder brother would be in trouble with the government if he tried to leave. So he had left a handsome sum of gold. So Sanatan had been put in prison. Is everyone still okay? Okay. And he had spoken to the jailer and told him that I would appreciate it if you'd free me, because after this I'm going to go to Mecca. And it says in the Muslim Shastras that if you free someone to go to Mecca, then you also get the benefit of going back to the spiritual world in due course of time. So the jailer, although externally pious, said, well, that's not good enough. And Sanatan said, well, how about if I give you some gold? And the jailer said, well, even if you give me gold, then I'll be held liable for freeing you. And Sanatan offered more gold, and then he said, I'll also give you an excuse. Tell the Nawab that you took Sanatan out to answer the call of nature, and with his chains on, he jumped into the Ganga, and no one found his body. And that was the end of him. And he said, you'll never see me again anyway. I'm leaving for Mecca. I'll never come back, and your story will hold up. So the jailer, seeing the possible windfall of gold and having a ready excuse that was good enough for him to let Sanatan go. I'm not convinced that's the solution, but it doesn't look very good to me. If anybody wants to make lots of money, invent a microphone that can withstand ISKCON's relentless twisting and turning. And so Sanatan then left through a back route out of town so no one would see him. And he took with him one servant named Ishana. And he traversed the hilly country heading towards the mountains, stopped at an inn. At the inn there was an owner who was a dacoit. That is, he was a thief, and he had a sophisticated means of robbing people. He had an astrologer who was expert at prashna. He could tell when someone was coming near that had great wealth. And this astrologer had identified Sanatan as a wealthy person carrying gold. So when Sanatan got to the inn with Ishana, The innkeeper was overly accommodating. And Sanatan was a statesman. He had run a government. He was no slouch. Thank you, Prabhu. And there's an old saying that too much devotion is a sign of a thief. So he could understand something's wrong here. So he had asked Ishana, do you have any gold? Because Sanatan didn't bring any gold with him, but Ishana said, yes, I have 7 gold coins. Sanatan said, give them to me. So Ishana had given him the gold. Sanatan took it to the innkeeper and he said, here, my donation to you. All I ask is you get me across this next wilderness section so I can make my way to my destination. And the jailer was astonished that he had handed over this gold, and he said, you just saved me, because in my evil ways I was actually planning on murdering you this very night to take this gold, and now you've saved me from that sin. He said, I knew from my astrologer that you had 8 gold coins. So Sanatan, the next morning, came to his servant Ishana, and he said, I think you have 1 more gold coin. And Ishana sheepishly, yes, I have. Sanatan said, keep it and go home. We'll part ways here. And Sanatan then headed through the wilderness, and at that time, leaving everything behind, with no money, only heading towards finding shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he felt satisfied and happy. And as he made his way towards Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he ran into a brother-in-law of his who had spotted Sanatan Goswami from a distance and recognized him and come over to speak to him. And he asked him, why don't you stay here a few days? Sanatan said, I will not stay here even a few minutes. This is the mood of somebody who's enlivened in spiritual life, that I don't have a moment to spare. I'm only going towards Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No time to linger in the material world anymore. But before Sanatan left, his brother-in-law gave Sanatan a valuable chadar, like this one. Someone gave me yesterday. So he was wearing his chadar. And when he got to the place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was staying at Chandrasekhar Acharya's house, Sanatan, by the Lord's arrangement, was lingering outside, loitering, waiting. And being omniscient, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, oh, there's a Vaishnava outside. Please go greet him. So Chandrasekhar opened the door and looked out. And of course, Sanatan was still dressed as a Muslim, and he had been traveling through the wilderness, so he looked like a mendicant. Coming back inside, Chandrasekhar told Mahaprabhu that there's no Vaishnav. Mahaprabhu said, is there anyone at all? And he replied to Chandrasekhar, oh yes, there's a Muslim mendicant. Mahaprabhu said, bring him in. Greatly surprised, Chandrasekhar brought him inside the house, and immediately Mahaprabhu embraced him. His old friend, eternal associate, he had met once, and now he was bringing him into his association permanently. Mahaprabhu asked Chandrasekhar to get Sanatan Goswami cleaned up. He took him for a shave, gave him some clean cloth, and Sanatan came back, shaved, bright, and wearing the expensive shawl that he had been given. Mahaprabhu didn't say anything, but he glanced a few times. And Sanatan, being very intelligent, thought, he doesn't approve of my expensive blanket. Now that I'm a renunciate and in his fold. So Sanatan, by his own initiative, then went down to a bathing ghat, and a section of that bathing ghat is where people would wash their clothes and then put them on the banks of the river to dry. And he found a Bengali who had an old torn quilt. Old torn quilts are not hard to find in India. And he approached this man and he said, I would like to trade you my expensive blanket for that torn quilt. And the man retorted, why would you joke with me in such a sarcastic way, making fun of my poverty? And Sanat said, no, I'm completely sincere. I can no longer keep this, and I would like to take your torn quilt. So the man agreed, and when Sanatan came back to the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now with a torn quilt, Mahaprabhu was unlimitedly pleased. And he said, when a doctor treats somebody for a disease, he makes sure that there's not any of the disease, that none of the disease persists. He said, if you leave even just a little bit of the disease, like when they cut for cancer, they keep cutting around until under the microscope they can see there's no more cancer cell, everything's gone. Even one cell left behind and it can multiply again and then the cancer takes over. So Mahaprabhu said, the teacher must make sure that all of the disease is gone. All of one's attachments to the material world. So, Srila Rupa Goswami then had met with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu had given him teachings about devotional service for many days. And he also taught Sanatana Goswami. You will find those teachings in the Madhya Lila, the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Rupa Goswami, he had instructed to write plays. He had recognized Rupa Goswami, as I mentioned the other night, that Rupa Goswami had heard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu singing at Rathayatra and had written a verse expressing what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling at Rathayatra. And therefore, we have this pranam mantra for Rupa Goswami that says, Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadah Mayam Dadati Swakadantikam. And that is that Rupa Goswami, Manobhishtam, he understood the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After all, Rupa and Sanatana are Lalita and Vishakha, Sakis, in the spiritual world who assist Krishna and his intimate pastimes. In this world, externally, they show the path of devotional service through the senses. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma nyadavritam anakulyena krishna nushilanam bhaktirutama. There's a way in which we engage in all kinds of activities and we use our senses. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tapratmina nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktiruchite. There's a way in which by using the senses in the service of Krishna, they become purified. In fact, in the Gita, Krishna says, kaina manasa bhujya, that there's the yogis, they use all of their senses, but only for the purpose of purification, not for sense gratification. So, in their worldly manifestation, Rupa and Sanatan, they show the path of regulated bhakti. Although they're on the spontaneous path of bhakti, in the spiritual world they're engaged in loving devotional service with Krishna spontaneously, eternal servants, and The Nectar of Instruction says we're to follow in the footsteps of such eternal associates of Krishna in order to ourselves adopt that spontaneous mood. Tanama rupa charitati sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasana manasi niyoja tishtan vraje tananu ragi jananagami kalam nayed akilam itupadesha sara. Rupa Goswami writes in the Upadeshamrita, the Upadesha Saram, or the essence of all advice, is one should engage in devotional service full time, 24 hours a day, and then come to a natural, spontaneous attraction to the devotees in Vrindavan who follow Krishna spontaneously, and one then would naturally aspire to follow in the footsteps of such devotees. Our acharyas have explained, headed by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that we're to follow the example of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, who are eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual world, spontaneously engaged eternally, but we follow their so-called worldly example. What did they do when they were in this world? Nana shastra vichara naika nipanosha dharma samstapako lokanam hitakarana tribhuvane manyo sharanyakaro shi chaitanya. Is it? Radha Krishna padada vinda bhajana nandena mataliko. They were engaged in many different kinds of activities. Nana shastra, through all the shastras, they were mining the most important verses and lining them up to align the sampradaya and those who would follow after so they could know the path of devotional service. They also constructed temples. And what else? Sankhya Purvaka Nama Gana Nibdibi Kalavasani Krito. They counted their devotional practices very fastidiously. They counted how many times they chanted, how many times they bowed down, how much they were studying the shastra and so forth. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur confirms, as they followed Ekadashi in this world, as they chanted their rounds and measured them, we're also to follow in their footsteps. In that way, we're following the residents of Vrindavan, and one will make rapid progress in devotional service. Even those who are on the path of regulated devotional service, who don't have a spontaneous taste, still they're considered the raganugas because they are ajatra, ruchi, sadhana bhakti. Ajatra ruchi, raganuga sadhana bhakti means that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that even though one doesn't have the qualification for raganuga bhakti, which is greed, intense desire to have it with complete focus on that. If one follows the footsteps of the eternal associates, as they've given the example in this world, even before one has that taste, then one will gradually develop a spontaneous taste and a hankering, which is the qualification to enter into the process of spontaneous devotional service. Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, that Srila Rupa Goswami is Manjari, and he's the leader of our Gaudiya Sampradaya in that he's the main person who has established the process of Raganuga Bhakti and the system through which we'll attain that, and therefore our sampradaya, in our sampradaya we're called the Rupanugas. Rupa Anuga means those who follow Srila Rupa Goswami. So today is the disappearance day of Srila Rupa Goswami, and we can meditate on him and remember how everything that we're doing from morning until evening is a product of his teachings, and we can follow him. today we'll be hearing the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from 2nd Canto, Chapter 3, Text Number 10. Akama sarvakama va mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. I'll do the word for word. Akama. One who has transcended all material desires. Sarvakama. One who has the sum total of all material desires. Va. Either. Mokshakama. One who desires liberation. Udarati. With broader intelligence. Tivrena, with great force. Bhakti yogina, my devotional service to the Lord. Yajeta, should worship. Purusham, the Lord. Param, the Supreme Home. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, or the Supreme Personality. It is He only who can award liberation to the impersonalists by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahmajyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahmajyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the Supreme Impersonal Brahmajyoti must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. Akama is one who has no material desire, a living being naturally being the part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Purusham Purna, has as his natural function to serve the Supreme Being, just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert, like the stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as Bhajaniya Parama Purusha Sukhamatra Sva Sukhatvam in his Sandarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world. And such intuition is expressed in the matter of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc., by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Rajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis loved the Lord without any return, and this is the perfect exhibition of the Akama spirit. Kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, whereas the spirit of Akama is fully exhibited in the spiritual world. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahmajyoti can also be exhibitions of Kama spirit, if they are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from the material miseries. A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, a pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the Kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instruction of the Lord as he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. Thus he became a Kama. That is the perfect stage of a perfect living being. Udarati means one who has a broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods, and such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 7.20 as Hritagyana, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. One cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with the desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly. And everyone, whether an akama or sakama, or mokshakama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana. As the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra. Tivra. Similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc. may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. I offer my respectful obeisances to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all of you, the sincere practitioners of pure devotional service. So we've had the great pleasure over the weekend of your association. Tomorrow we're going back. Of course, you never know if you're on Air Canada, if you're going anywhere. But we're going to try anyway to go back to California, where we live most of the time, some of the time, and be celebrating Balaram Purnima and Janmashtami there, staying there for a little while until we leave for Vrindavan. For Kartik. We'll go to Kartik and spend some time in Vrindavan, and we'll do some parikrams there. And then we'll camp out at Govardhan Hill under the shelter of the Bhaktivedanta Ashram there and Asit Krishna Maharaj, who's the Mahant. And we'll have a reading of Bhagavatam, where we get together for about 5 hours a day and hear Bhagavatam together. We have morning and evening program and so forth. You're all invited. Come on down. And it's notable how vibrant the community is here. Many different programs headed by stalwarts who are taking responsibility for their own spiritual lives and then have the maturity to guide others as well. And we see many young people here who are enthusiastic about devotional service in this environment. We see the temple being maintained conscientiously in many different ways that are exemplary. And I took a walk this morning when I walked out the door and down where all the rich people live. I'm just appreciating that Krishna is at the head of the street. Everyone thinks, I'm rich. And he's like, you have no idea what wealth means. Krishna owns everything. Ishavasamidam sarvam yat kincha jagat yam jagat tena tyaktena bunjita magradakasya sudam. And I thought, devotees, you know, to maintain a house like that is thinking, we live in a small house and I'm constantly fixing it. Not me, but I hire somebody. And I was just thinking, what a strain it is to maintain a big house, and then just to stay there. The leaks, the cracks, the things, electricity. Oh, we got to tear out the floorboards and fix it now. But those who live with Krishna, they just come and worship Krishna. Of course, we fix this place constantly too. It's just an old building, but we're doing it for Krishna. So the anxiety is for Krishna, that Krishna's place should be nice and clean and fixed. And everyone else, they just have the burden of thinking how to maintain their lives at a certain standard, and they can't keep it. It'll go down at some point, or they'll have to transmigrate. So this is an encouraging verse, akama sarva kamova moksha kamadaryu. That covers all categories of people. That's, if you have all material desires, raise your hand now, just kidding. If you have no material desires, or if you want liberation from the whole thing, these karma, jnana, bhakti, there's various categories of people in the world. And you can meet those people. If you go out to door to door and you meet people in the world, you see some people have great aspiration to be happy in the material world. Other people are sick of it. They want to give it up. They've even taken to philosophies that support the idea of liberation. And then there are innocent people who are just open to serving God. And there are those exemplary pure devotees who have understood bhakti and have decided very wisely to just serve Krishna. And now, udaradi, if one becomes broad-minded by the mercy of the devotees and decides that I'm going to serve Krishna, then there's no loss. Even if one has some material desire, Krishna will fulfill it in such a way that the devotee won't be disturbed ultimately in his or her practice of devotional service. Kardama Muni had meditated for thousands of years. Such a sincere devotee that Lord Narayan appeared personally to see him riding on Garuda. And the Lord shed a tear out of compassion for his devotee. So nice. When we serve Krishna, he appreciates everything we do. And when we become Krishna's devotee, then everything Krishna has, which is everything, is also ours. When Rukmini wrote to Krishna, she said, please come rescue me. Her father Bhishmaka had agreed with her brother, Rukmini's brother Rukmi, to marry off Rukmini to Shishupal. Bhishmaka wasn't into it, but he was attached to his son. You see this a lot of times, even in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhritarashtra. He knew the right thing, but he couldn't do it. He was too attached to Duryodhana. So the wedding was arranged. He just went ahead. Things like that happen in the material world. Everyone knows what the right thing to do, and then it goes the wrong way due to attachment. So Rukmini said, I'm not going to marry anybody but Krishna. That's it. She had never met him before, but she had heard about him enough so that she developed this strong attachment. So strong, she prayed and wrote to Krishna in a letter that I'm going to aspire to marry you life after life. What I'll do is I'll perform such severe austerities to attain you that I'll give up my life again and again, until you marry me. And when Krishna got Rukmini's letter, he immediately made arrangements to come and pull her out of the wedding party. Now, she was a Kshatriya's daughter, so she had a strategic mind. And she told Krishna, there's a certain part of the wedding ceremony. She had seen them before in her family enough to know there was a time in which he could pluck her out without too much bloodshed. Krishna had brought a few soldiers, but Balaram also came along and brought more. And just as Rukmini, the young maiden, was praying to Goddess Durga before she would meet the wedding party and then be picked up by her prospective husband, Shishupal, that would have been it. There was only a short window from the time she prayed to Durga and then walked out. So that's the time she told Krishna to pick her up. So she didn't know if Krishna was going to respond. But when she came out and she saw Krishna, Krishna saw her, and she was so attractive that all the other kings that were there to observe the wedding, they were stunned by her beauty. Some of them fell off their horses. Because she's the goddess of fortune. She belongs to Krishna. And Krishna boldly came in, picked her up, put her on his chariot, and took off. And the other kings, see, they had everything backwards. Krishna is described like the lion who had stolen away the prize of the jackals. But they thought, we're the lions, and Krishna is such a low-class person, he just stole her. That's how dangerous Maya is. You get everything reversed. And as he was driving off, there was some chase, but they were easily fended off. And as Rukmini got onto the chariot, Krishna used the phrase Tavakai and said that these are all your soldiers. The implication was, what is mine, that's now yours. He's so kind to his devotees. He said, this is yours. These are all your men. Sir, all this is your kingdom. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, then Krishna gives himself and he gives everything to the devotee. A materialistic person is only, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, licking the outside of a bottle. You have a big house on Roxbury. Roxboro? Yes. Roxboro, you'd think you'd be happy, but nobody's happy. It's the same thing as living in a little hut or living on the street or in a van under a bridge. Same problems of life, same anxieties. They're just on different scales. But one who surrenders to Krishna, a kama, and says, I give all my everything to Krishna. And I have no real life except for the life of serving Krishna, which is true. That person becomes supremely happy and paradoxically also becomes the wealthiest of all people. No material desires, only desire to serve Krishna. And if it happens that a person still has material desires when he or she surrenders to Krishna, then satyam dishati artito artito nirnam naivartato yad svayam artito yata svayam vidate bhagavan anichatam ichapi danam nijapada palavam. Sorry, I butchered part of that verse. But it says that when one serves Krishna and then begins to ask Krishna for material benedictions, Krishna will certainly respond and if fulfill the desire of the devotee who requests him. But he does it in such a way that they won't want it anymore. And he covers that material desire. And instead of giving him the material reward, he gives him his own devotional service. He's so expert. Therefore, it's recommended that even if one has a material desire, one should approach Krishna instead of anyone else. And so we should be encouraged in whatever situation we're in to go on serving Krishna and know that the remedy is there, that by continuing to serve Krishna, Kapila Dev says, just as food is digested in the stomach without our knowing it. I mean, we know it, or we're barely aware of it, right? It happens by, as if automatic. So similarly, in the process of devotional service and hearing and chanting and serving, then Krishna digests the subtle material body along with any of the desires and the samskars, which are latent desires that impel us to think of material objects and engage with them. Those all become diminished over time. Shrinvatam swa kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyan taksto hibadrami vidhunoti suritsitam, because Krishna is the vidhunoti. He's there personally and he helps sort it all out. So one thing that we can do is sincerely serve Krishna despite the fact that we have material desires or we may have some limitations. We needn't worry because Krishna carries what we lack and preserves what we have in his service. We should simply go on and serve in the spirit of this verse. Udara deed, have a broader outlook that Krishna can even out everything, all the material desires and all the inefficiencies. And just to conclude this thought, as I started with Kardama Muni, and Narayan shed a tear out of compassion for him. In his prayers, Kardama Muni said to the Lord, beautiful prayers. He said, I have a material desire, I need a wife. And Narayan said, I already know that. Which is very interesting because before we even ask Krishna for anything, he already knows. Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, just as one can smell a flower, Krishna can sense what our internal condition is. There's nothing unknown to him. He knows all of our desires and aspirations. And he said, I've already made an arrangement for you. And Prabhupada points out that even if you have a material need in this world, a desire for something, some arrangement, he said, better to put it in Krishna's hands. Because who knows better, Krishna or me? Krishna. He knows. He's got knowledge. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishyami chabhutani mam tu vedan kashyana. Basically, Krishna says, I already know everything. So better to put it in his hands. Now we'll just take a couple of comments because it's time for us to go on Harinam door to door in Roxborough in a few minutes. Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. As much as I've studied Vedic literature, I have a big impression that as we mentioned, some social structures like communes, they read Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, because how they built their society, it was they were using more for Ashramat, they were using, you know, the leaders who were worshipped, and all of the structures really looked like a Vedic structure, but they didn't have definitely something to end of it because those people were extremely unhappy. And I was went to the school with the communist studies, unfortunately, but even though those people, in the end of some critical situation, they were referring to the God, like Stalin, he was put in God-mother icon, and he was was flying around Moscow when Nazis come close to it. Christian people come to him and say, you know, the communism is going to break down. He said, why? Because you don't have a God here. And they were like trying to mask all their religions and to put communism on top of it. So do you think that those people are using like Krishna guidance in their material way? Or it just like the, it's a replication of material world but covered by Maya?
Yes. Those who have some material desire to be fulfilled and they concoct something. Krishna says, Sarvasya Chaham Riti Sani Vishtoma Taksmitya Gyanam Apohanam Sha. I'm the one who's giving them the intelligence how to come up with these errant philosophies. And there's also a way in which when one worships demigods, Krishna says, Yo yo yam yam tudum bhaktam shara yarchitam ichiti. Tasya tasya chalam sharam tamiva viridham yaham. He said, you're worshiping a demigod to fulfill your material desire. He said, but it's coming from me anyway. Where do you think they're getting it from? As we pray, yat pada pallava yugam vinidaya kumbhad vanve pranama samaye saganadi raja vignam vinhantu malamasya jagatriyasya. Govinda mari purusham tamaham bhajami. You see, people put a little deity of Ganesh on their dashboard. I don't know, what's that, to avoid traffic or what? But Brahma Samhita says, where do you think Ganesh gets his power to remove obstacles on your path? He's holding Lord Nrsingadev's lotus feet on his head. That's where he gets it from. So an intelligent person then says, well, why don't I cut out the middleman? I'll just go straight to Krishna instead of depending on so many material things. Let's see if there's another question. The $100 is still on the table from yesterday. If you ask a bad question, you can get $100. Canadian. So then, yes, Prabhu. Said that because Charu, my godbrother, told me that he asked Prabhupada in Australia in 1970, he asked Prabhupada, how long does it take to be able to chant purely without offenses? And he said, it took Prabhupada about a minute to answer him, and he said, 40 years. It really depends on our application, because as the admonition goes, if you make offenses while you're chanting, it could take many lifetimes. So we have something to do with it. If we're sincere and we try to avoid offenses and apply ourselves, use our volition, free will, to serve Krishna, fortify our intelligence so that we remain strong in devotional service, then process is more effective. Like when you're trying to light a fire and you're also sprinkling water on it, it goes a lot slower. You use soggy wood. But if we try to keep ourselves spiritually fit and in good association, then it could be quicker. But there is a purpose to these material desires lingering, because Krishna wants us to take them seriously. For a sincere devotee or anyone who's trying to extricate himself from the material world will start to notice that material desires and material contact are perilous. There's a way in which Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yehi samspashaja bhoga dukha yonaye vate adyanta vanti konti anateshu ramate buddha. An intelligent person doesn't like to interact with material intent, with material objects, because he says then you have a complex situation. He says, dukkha yonaya. He gives his example of giving birth. If you impregnate someone and they're going to give birth, you've got a lot of responsibility after that. And you're going to have to take care of it for more than 40 years. And similarly, Krishna compares that to our pure soul's interaction with the material world. If you have a material desire and with material intent, you try to possess or control or enjoy the material world, he said that's like you just made an impregnation there. And what's going to come out? A little character named Dookie. Misery. So a section of the Yoga Sutras, there's a commentary attributed to Vyasadeva, and he says the yogis, they're really careful of interacting with the material world. So they're as sensitive as an eyeball, because the eye is so sensitive. Even if you put a little strand of cotton there, you'll be like trying to get it out because our eye is so sensitive. They're so sensitive to the idea that when you try to enjoy the material world, then you get what's called a hlada samskar, as in hladini. You get this impression that you can enjoy the material objects and it's really hard to get rid of it. So they're very careful about that, because it lingers. And when we see how consequential it is that we interact with the material world, then we become reticent to do that if we're more careful. Of course, we replace all of the Ladini samskars with the enjoyment of devotional service. Yat pada pankacha palasa vilasya bhakta. Karmashayam gratitam ugratayanti santa. Tadvanda rikta matayo yata yogi buddha shotoganas kamaranam bhajavasudevam. Bhagavatam's solution is the vilas that you get from the Lord's lotus feet. Vilas means enjoyment. And when you're able to enjoy, like I see some devotees, they come here and they just can't wait to see Krishna. You know, they're hanging on the railing and it's like, hey, he's here now. Look at him. What's he wearing? Or, you know, every greeting of the deities. Dharma Prana Prabhu is like, crown, crown. Chatter, chatter. You know, there's a velas devotees have. When they take the charanamrita, somebody puts a little oil and you smell it and you go, oh. This is the loss. And so we get those samskars for Krishna and everything connected with him. And if we live our life like that, then there's a natural way in which Krishna helps to connect us more to him. And because of that, Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharasa Dehina Rasavarjam Rasopyasya Paramjishvarnavartate. We have a higher taste. We enjoy different categories. Our sense gratification is for Krishna. And then we're just not interested in Taco Bell. I don't know if you have it here, but we'd rather eat wood than Taco Bell, but we're happy with prasadam. We don't need to watch a movie because there's so much entertainment in the Bhagavatam. I mean, the story of Ashwatthama and the war between Shiva and Daksha. Come on, he cut off his head and he put on a goat head. That's better than, I never read it, but what's that thing? Those stupid books? Oh, sorry, that could be blasphemy. Harry Potter. I mean, it's all just concocted nonsense, but there's a reality in the And these stories, it's reality. These things happen. They're itihasas. There's histories of what happened. But if you want to hear about a war, read the Bhagavatam. There's people riding on different kinds of animals, fighting each other with choppers and stuff. Like, what? Everything there's in the Bhagavatam to absorb our intelligence. And meanwhile, the intention of the Bhagavatam, Dharma Prochita Kaitavo Taraparamo Nimatsaranam Satam, it's all there for our benefit. Nothing's there for a profit motive. You know, buy this Disney film, show it to your kids. Like, what is that? It's a useless waste of time. But the Bhagavatam purifies us, okay? It's true.
Well, I'm always wondering about the Padara Dhyana Sarana. And I can see that I have not Dhyana Sarana. So, how can someone like me benefit, truly benefit from that?
Well, there's degrees. Nashta Praesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyutama Shloki Paktir Bhavati Naishtiki. In that paragraph, starting with Shushu Sho up to Bidite Hridaya Grantish, there's a description of the progression of devotional service and simultaneous liberation from material desires. And as translated, they're destroyed almost to nil. Almost to nil means you're almost there. So devotees may have embraced devotional service as their life and soul, and then notice in themselves traces of envy and so forth. And that means they're destroyed almost to nil. But as we continue, the Bhagavatam says, Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lobhadayas che cheta itera navidam stitam sati prasiditi. Tada bhava. There is a time when one stitam sati prasiditi. This sati means shudasattva. And there is a time, stitam, you'll be situated in there. And therefore, our acharyas have given us signposts along the way that here's where you are now. And you're going to be here next. So we can be encouraged and go on in our devotional service knowing that even if you quit, you start devotional service. Prabhupada writes about this in the Upadeshamrita. Somebody starts devotional service sincerely and then decides, no, I'd rather eat at Taco Bell. And then Krishna, he said, the devotee will be forcibly dragged by Krishna. Be forcibly dragged. And in the light of the Bhagavad, there's a chapter in or a passage in which Prabhupada says that it's compared in the autumn season, the animals, it's mating season. So when the female is impregnated, she's going to give birth. So when one starts the process of devotional service, Prabhupada says the result is sure and certain. Even if one decides not to do it, said, doesn't mean the result's not going to come. It's just going to be dragged to that. So if we can understand how powerful the devotional process is, and then we say, well, what if I cooperated? What if I just made a decision to use this one lifetime completely for Krishna, and I just said, I'm going to completely cooperate. If even those who don't cooperate get dragged, so it's no fun being dragged. When I was a kid and I had to go for a shot at Kaiser Hospital, my mom told me I could have ice cream afterwards if I didn't make a scene, because I think I didn't like shots. And I got there and I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to be cool as a cucumber in an ice box, but when I got there, I freaked out. I was like, no ice cream. And, but if somehow or other we can cooperate with Krishna, I got dragged anyway and I got the shot. Might as well take your medicine while you can. Anyway, Sankirtan is like churning. We talked about that on the street corner the other day. And this process of hearing chanting is like churning. You're coming to Mangalartik and engaging your life in service. It's like churning also. It's like, how many years is it going to be? When's it going to happen? But the demigods and demons, they went to great trouble to churn based on the instruction of the Lord. And everything came out. And he made all the arrangements at the end that they got the nectar and so forth. So that'll happen for us too. Main thing is keep churning. Don't think there won't be difficulties. Demigods got smashed by Mandara Mountain. Krishna fixed them up again. They were inconvenienced in so many ways and inept in so many ways, and Krishna made up for it. So who knows? The mood of the devotee is, since I already know about devotional service and I know I'm sincere, even though I may not be able to fully practice it, I know that it will be successful by Krishna's grace. So the devotee just remains patient. We have to remain patient with our own ineptitude. That's one of the worst things, is to know that we're not up to the task, but we still have to tolerate that and keep going. Thank you, everybody, for your effusive hospitality at every step when we come here, and also for setting such a great example. I think this is some kind of vortex. It's not really fair that you have all the best musicians, the best cooks, the most stellar devotees. You're really lucky to have this community, such great leadership and examples and so forth. So just from this one little place called Toronto, I don't even know where the name comes from, it sounds like indigenous, you'll be completely successful and go back to Godhead from this little waiting station. Just come to Mangalartik, chant your rounds, follow the four regular principles, and read Bhagavatam and try to smash your goals. Because that way, as you're trying to smash your goals, time will go by like that, and you'll wake up one day and you go like, hey, how did I turn 70? I've been busy, and you didn't even notice. And the same thing will happen when you leave your body. You'll be so busy reaching the next goal to serve Krishna. It's like, okay, you got to go now. We'll put you somewhere else. You know, it's like, all right, just hurry up so we can get this done and move on with our service. If you're so preoccupied. So we're deeply grateful to have your association, and thank you for continuing the process of devotional service and helping one another to go back to Godhead. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Bijo Des. The end. Hogya. We have a word from our sponsor.